In this episode, I had the privilege of hosting Ray Shuford, a retired Dallas Fire Department veteran on a mission to provide support for first responders nationwide. Ray's insights shed light on the often unseen challenges faced by these everyday first responder heroes. Let's dive in. Ray Shuford, welcome to the No Gray Areas podcast. Do I get to call you Shu? You said your friends call you Shu.
All my friends call me Shu, and I definitely consider you one of my friends, P-Man.
All right. So we're going to jump right into this. I am so excited about this podcast, this interview with you. We met 2 years ago, right?
It's been about 2 years, yeah. And it don't seem like it's been that long, but it's been about 2 years.
We had a mutual friend.
Right.
We're in Dallas, and you're from Dallas, and So let's just jump right in. Tell me a little bit about this to the next shift.
Okay, so first and foremost, thank you once again, man, for allowing me to be on. I always want to say thank you because this is a great opportunity. To the next shift is an organization, a nonprofit organization that I created when I actually retired from the Dallas Fire and Rescue Department about 2.5 years ago. And the organization, it's a solution-based organization that when I was in the chaplain's role for the department, I saw so many things behind the curtain that first responders were dealing with. And so when I actually left and I turned my boots in, or my crosses, per se, you know, and I kind of hung that up. But you never hang up your crosses, you know that. And shortly after that, several guys committed suicide on different occasions, and several people actually attempted suicide. So I know that I wanted to do something to help them to further what I had been doing within the fire department. And so I created To the Next Shift, and it's a nonprofit that gives support solutions for a successful pathway for first responders. So many people, PMAC, don't know what first responders go through because they just don't do that type of work. And, you know, doing that for nearly 3 decades of my life, having some ups and downs, some wins and losses. I just said that I knew what I had was valuable, so I had to give those first responders a lifeline. And they have some great resources within the departments everywhere around the country. And I go around the country speaking to different places, all first responders everywhere, just about the pitfalls and things that can happen of being a first responder. Because when you sign up for it, you really don't know what you're signing up for until you jump into it. And then now it's too late and you look up and it's like, wow, man, I got myself stuck in some crap, you know. And so that's why the organization was created. Yes, sir.
Yeah, man, that's incredible, Ray. And thank you so much for doing that. Our whole team here at the No Gray Areas podcast, we have a huge heart for first responders. You know, no community is going to function without first responders. And like you said so well, any of us that aren't first responders, we might have some empathy and compassion for what you all go through, but we really don't know the load you all carry, what you have to see, the crap that you go through.
Right.
Having an organization like this is incredible. I actually have a son who's a first responder. He's in the Marine Corps and he works for the NCIS, and he's just shared with me a little bit the stuff that he's gone through. I have a lot of friends who are in the police department, fire department, so I get it, and I'm so incredibly thankful for that. So you spent 25 years with the fire department, and a lot of that is a chaplain, correct?
Yeah. So, man, I mean, I definitely appreciate that you get it, and definitely will be thinking and praying for your son and all the things that he deals with. You know, I like to always say that nobody thinks about a first responder until they really need a first responder.
Wow.
And so that's just, you know, so true about it, you know. And so they go about their regular routines and days just doing what they do, but they rarely, you know, ask for help from other people. And the community is so tight-knit that you're not going to, you know, you're the one that's going to help someone else, so you're not going to go out and like, hey, I need help. So that's where also the organization comes in to help them with, you know, making solutions, getting you know, a therapist, you know, and mentorship and things that will, you know, really help them along this journey of being a first responder.
Do you see that changing, Ray, that that there used to be for sure a stigma against asking for help. Like you're saying, first responders are supposed to be helping others, and so it was really hard for them to ask for help or to get therapy. Do you see that shifting, or do you still see that as a huge hurdle that we need to overcome?
Well, I definitely can see it being a different shift from actually when I became a first responder back in 1995. And if we're doing the same things that we did in 1995, and even before that, we're doing the wrong things. And I think that this newer generation of first responders are being more proactive in seeking, you know, mental, you know, help, you know, for problems, for things, you know, taking, quote unquote, mental health days. You know, you have to take care of yourself before you can take care of somebody else. So I'm going to say that that it is shifting, but yet it still is a slow process. And to the next shift and other organizations, we're doing everything that we can to help this shift a little bit faster, you know. Yeah. And I'm going to do everything that I can to continue to help the first responder. Just on yesterday, I got a call, and just when we think that things are slowing down some, and all the way through 2023, the group that we actually reach out to, and it's about 650 first responders that we send care packages to and check on and resource and are actually linked up to our website and everything that we have going on. Everything was good for 2023, but just on yesterday, we got a call February 1st of 2024, a young first responder took his life. And so it just makes me and so many other individuals sad, for one, for that family, that organization, and anybody who's associated with him and his family. But then also, too, you know, you think you're making good headway. So it always has you to second guess. But having a podcast like yours to talk candidly about these things that's happening, and then maybe partner up with other resources that are doing the same thing, because, man, you can't do this all by yourself. It's all hands on deck when you're talking about the suicidal epidemic that's happening in all our communities. But yeah, just more intentionally, the first responder community, you know, first responders are 2 to 3 times likely to commit suicide than actual civilians. Suicidal ideations are 10 times higher than the regular civilian. The divorce rate in relationships and everything is 65% to 75% amongst the first responder community. And all these things are things that attribute to this epidemic, this problem, because you mentioned about having things that first responders see on a daily basis. But what about the regular day in and day out things that go on at home or in your own family or just taking care of your own self, you know? So it's a grind, but, you know, things are being put in place to help them to be better.
And Ray, you bring up a great point, because you have, you know, you think of a first responder and maybe they go again, you know, I've talked to enough first responders, fatality of a child is one of the worst things that you guys have to deal with, right? So they go to some car accident or something and they're dealing with the fatality of a child, but then they're going home to a relationship that maybe is in shambles and falling apart, and dealing with all of those things put together, you can see why those statistics are so terrible. And I'm so thankful again that you guys are doing something about that. I'm going to put you on the spot. 25 years you worked in this. Tell me what your best day and your worst day.
27 years. So
27. Okay.
I got them 2 years mean a lot.
Yeah, I will not steal years, those 2 years from you, man.
2 more years. Yeah. So, man, I'm going to say probably one of my best days that I ever had is, man, you might think I'm fibbing a little bit, Pete, but I'm not, man. I actually delivered 2 babies in 1 day.
Wow.
And so, I know it seems crazy, but that's almost like that cannot happen. But delivered 2 babies in 1 day. The babies were twins, and so the first baby came out fine. Boom, everything was smooth, and me and my guys. It's already intense anyway, you know, and the energy is up, the anxiety is up. It's, you get a call in the middle of the night. This young lady having a baby, boom, baby's coming out. You get there, you know, they teach you all this stuff. Baby comes out, cut the cord, 6 and 9. suction the nose, everything, clean the baby up. It's like, oh man, we did it. And then all of a sudden her mom comes in and says, hey, what about the other baby? And
no was way.
Like, the other baby? Like, what are you talking about? She said, she's having twins. She didn't tell you? Like, no, you didn't tell us you're having twins. And so, oh man, we're looking and man, the other baby is not, you know, kind of, you don't see it too much, you know? And so all of a sudden now, hey, you need to push, you need to push. So man, as soon as she pushes, man, you see two feet coming out. And that's a bad sign because, you know, the yep. baby is supposed to be the other way. So it's a breech presentation. And man, it was chaotic then, you know? And so my partner, man, just so happened, man, phenomenal guy, man. He was a nurse as well. So he had a little extra training and, man, we was able to deliver that baby. But when the baby came out, the baby wasn't breathing. And so we had to start compressions on the baby, doing full resuscitation and everything. And by the time, you know, we got the ambulance was there, got the baby to the hospital, did everything, man, both babies were doing well. And it was, that was just a great moment because you see life actually coming in. Now, on the other hand, when you just mentioned about
before you jump into the worst day, let me just say that's a good day, what you just described. I mean, you birth these two babies, you're part of that, and then one of them, you end up being part of saving the baby's life. What an amazing, that's a good day. That's a good day. All right, so with the flip side, worst day.
Flip side, almost pretty much the same thing, man. You know, got a call about two blocks from the station, get there, and it's a father coming out with his 2-year-old young daughter. And man, she was lifeless. And you know, asked him what was going on. He said, man, I don't know. She, you know, she's not breathing. And you look at her color was leaving her and everything. So you get the young lady and you know, you instantly start doing all the stuff that you're trained to do. And you're looking at her and you know that it might be definitely a possibility that you're not gonna be able to bring her back, and that's up to God. I know I've been had so many situations where I've done everything right, and God still says, hey, it's that person's time. And I've done everything wrong, and that person still, you know, walks into the fire station, 3 weeks later and saying, hey, you remember me? And it's like, wow, you was dead when I saw you last. But
wow.
Going back to this young girl, the reason why it was, like I say, one of the worst days is because, man, at that time, I had a 2-year-old daughter. And just to look and see that little girl, and she reminded me of my 2-year-old daughter so much. And just to look at that, the panic and the despair on that father's face was a look that I'll never forget. I can still see, you know, where the station was, leaving the station, turning left on this particular street. And it was three houses to the right hand side. I can still remember that. That was well over, like I said, 20 years ago. But days like that, man, are tough just because of the fact that when you can, you know, people, they try to teach you to detach from the moment, but it's hard to detach when you're a people person and you love individuals and you see this guy with a daughter and you have the same thing at home. So it just makes you just really appreciate life more, appreciate your own kids, appreciate your friends more, your fellowship, and just what God gives you on a daily basis to do what he's called us to do, man. It just gives you a more better appreciation for that. So, it's been some tough days.
Yeah.
And so, but I would just off the top of the head, those are two situations that was, you know, very good and a not so good situation.
You know why we need to hear a story like that though, Ray, is because that adequately tells what you were trying to describe before. You that happened to you over 20 years ago, and you remember it was like it was yesterday. And the first responders have that happen multiple times over and over and over again, and they're carrying that with them.
Right.
So again, it's why, you know, thank you for what your organization is doing and caring so deeply. And thank you that you were a first responder and you served that way. What, Ray, what were some of the lessons you learned as a chaplain specifically I'm talking about, because I know you served both as a firefighter and a chaplain, but what are some lessons you learned as a chaplain? Because it really, as a chaplain, you go to a call and you're serving both the victims or the survivors, the family involved, and then you go away and now you're serving the first responders, right? So you're carrying a heavy burden with that. But tell us some of the lessons you've learned over through the years as a chaplain.
Well, the first thing that I definitely would say that one of the lessons that I learned is that you definitely have to personally, you have to make sure you, like you say, carrying a lot of weight. You have to make sure you take care of yourself, because it makes no sense for the person who's called to take care of the heroes, or the person that's taking care of somebody else, is not in the right space and everything. So definitely one of the lessons that I learned personally as a chaplain was to take care of myself. Secondly, you know, going when you're actually going to work, or you when I say not going to work, but going to do ministry, you know, with the family, it's not always good to offer advice. Or you know what? Hey, Patrick, man, I know we know what you're dealing with. I mean, that's probably not the best thing to say, just because you even though you may have an idea of what that family or that first responder is going through, you know, even though you may have went through a similar situation, it's still not the same situation. So, you know, I've heard people make the mistake all the time, and man, I know exactly what you're going through. I know exactly how you're feeling. And I've heard somebody come back and say, no, you don't. Mm-hmm. And then it was an awkward silence in the room. And it was like, wow, man, should have said that, you know. And so that's the second lesson. And, you know, the third lesson, you know, I would just say, man, you definitely have to be, you know, because I'm a man of faith, you definitely have to be very synced up or synced in with what God is giving you, pouring into you. And because you're giving out so much, you know, energy and effort to so many people. The Dallas Fire and Rescue Department, they actually had 2,000 members and their families. And that's the way the chaplaincy was set up during that time. So if you add a first responder and add that he or she has a wife or a husband and they have two kids, that's four individuals. And usually, you know, you're dealing with that whole entire family. So when you do that, if 2,000 have at least four people, and we left out the mom and dad, that's 8,000 people right there, you know.
That's
and
a
so
big, that's a big church.
That's a big church. That's a very, very big church. And you know, you're the chaplain, the pastor, the deacon, the usher, the hospitality. You do everything in the church. And then that goes back to the lesson number one. You know, you have to try to find time to take care of yourself. You know, and I know that's a very big department. At that time we had two full-time chaplains, and man, we were busier than a one-legged man in a butt-kicking contest. You know, it was so
that was one of my dad's favorite phrases. So thanks for using that. I love that. That you bring back good memories with that. I like that.
So man, one thing that I really enjoyed, P, was that man, I got to sit and see behind the curtain close up and really kind of devise some type of plan to help the future first responder. And leading into that, I wrote my newest book, my sixth book that'll be coming out real soon. And it's called So You Really Want to Be a First Responder. And it's a blueprint for those who are wanting to be in this first responder space, talking about some of those issues that have really caused some trauma in my personal life. In other first responders' life, because I interviewed so many of them, and everybody says the same thing: you need this, you need this, you need that, you need this, you need that. And so I just took all of that and pretty much made a blueprint and tips. But then not only just for them, it's for the family and friends and anybody who's associated walking this journey along with them. You know, so man, I'm very excited about it. And I've been going around speaking at different places. I spoke to 80 new recruits on last week and came with my fire and my thunder. And man, the eyes were big. And I said, I'm not telling you this to try to scare you off, because if you've truly been called, you're going to be in this room. And I really feel like you've been called. I said, but I just want to give you a plan that's going to help you navigate these waters a little bit better than the way I did. Because once again, what I shared with you, if we're doing the same thing that we did in 1995, which it was some good things in 1995, but it's a whole new space in 2024. Back then, if you said, hey, I think I need to go talk to somebody, I need to go see a shrink, or the word they say, you know, shrink or psychiatrist or somebody. Oh man, you don't need to do that. You're soft, you're weak. This job might not be for you. But guess what? I really feel like that everybody needs to have someone to talk to dump all of the things that this world is giving us on a daily basis, and let alone being a first responder dealing with all these other things that you have to deal with because you're called to help other people's situation. And one of the first things in the book that I share with the first responder is that from the very first day that you get on your shift, you need to go find you a qualified therapist. And if you don't have a certified therapist, the organization can do whatever it can to help you find someone and patch you up so that it can walk this journey with you step by step the very first day.
And you're saying that because it's not if they're going to have to deal with crap, it's when.
Yes.
And when I say crap, it's their own, the stuff that they're dealing with because of what they're seeing and enduring. You know what I love about this conversation right now, Ray, is this is like perfect timing. Hey, from your No Gray Areas team, we just want to say thank you so much for listening. And if you're loving this episode, would you just take a moment and leave us a review and rating on whatever platform you're listening from? If you're watching on YouTube, make sure you hit that subscribe button so you don't miss out on the new podcast episodes that drop every other Wednesday. By leaving a review and subscribing, you help others discover our podcast's inspirational messages to effectuate positive change in their lives. Okay, let's jump back into this episode. This is like perfect timing because you're talking about this book that's going to come out and how you're really trying to help people to navigate. Okay, you want to be a first responder, but really step back and understand what that's going to bring. Just this morning, I'm reading through the Gospels right now. Just this morning, I'm reading in Luke chapter 14. And in Luke chapter 14, Jesus tells a couple of parables. He's counting the cost. He goes, listen, only a fool would build a building without first figuring out what it's going to cost him. So, of course, you know, as a chaplain, that Jesus is basically saying, hey, if you're going to come follow me, you need to count the cost. It's going to cost you everything. But you're doing that with the first responders. Is you're saying, hey, we need you. I believe you're called, but this is what it's going to cost you to do this.
Wow, that's right. That's spot on, man. You hit the nail on the head. I mean, it's you know, and I really feel like that first responders, when they jump into this first responding space, they don't know how much that it possibly can cost them, you know, and if they think about, oh man, you know, I can get shot, or I can have a wall fall on me or burned up, something like that. But they don't think about this, the little subtleties from just really taking care of my mind. And I always tell them, P, I say, hey man, you get your eyes checked, right? They say, yeah. I say, you go get a physical every year. And the guy says, well, every now and then, you know. So I'm like, but you do all these things. He said, yeah, I do. I said, so why don't you just, you know, go get your the most important thing you have is your mind. There's nothing more powerful than a made up mind, you know? And so you hit it right in the head, man.
Yeah. Well, I love that you're doing that. Hey, so on your website, one of the things it talks about, and I'm quoting, it says that you help people make good choices, discern complex decisions, and deal with life challenges. Now, this is why it's perfect that you're on our podcast, because our podcast is all about the power and complexity of human choice, that we make our choices and eventually our choices make us. So it's perfect because you really feel at this next stage, this part of your journey, that what God has you doing is helping people walking through how they make good choices, how they discern complex decisions. Could you give us just, I mean, I'm not asking you to unpack everything because I know you do life coaching, but maybe just a couple of thoughts on tangible ways that we can become better decision makers. Because I like the word, I like that you use the word complex. Most decisions that we make as human beings, you know, we got the simple ones. Am I going to turn right or left?
Right.
But we talk about the big ones. There's a lot of complexity in there. So give us some tangible thoughts.
I got to go back to the book. You know, I mentioned about the one of the first things was the counseling.
Yes.
But the second thing was actually the mentorship. So when I talk about mentorship, you know, I've had so many people in my life that I could draw from to make, you know, great decisions by asking questions. So just a tangible thing to, like saying, getting to be where you're making good decisions is being able to ask good questions and, you know, open your mouth. And it's that doesn't cost you anything. My people used to always say that asking questions doesn't cost anything, you know, and the only bad question is a question not asked.
Yeah.
And so, I mean, I've always.
Let me just interrupt for a moment here. There's a reverse side to that, though, isn't there? I love that you said that. It doesn't cost you anything to ask a question. It might cost you not to ask that question, though, correct?
Oh, man. Correct. Yeah, man. And like you said, it might cost you everything not to ask that question, you know? And so, I've always asked a lot of questions. And, so I would just tell somebody in a tangible way to ask questions if you don't know anything, you know, or, you know, if you definitely don't know it, you know, there's so many things out here where you can research and you can find the answers, you know, for yourself. I always have to go back to, you know, once again, me being a spiritual guy, and you said you've been in the Gospels. And man, I you know, before I start my day, when I start my day, I'm up, I'm doing my my devotion, I'm getting my prayer and everything situated. Mm-hmm. You know, and what I found as well too, man, a lot of first responders, a lot of people, period, man, they are they just don't believe. And so when I'm going out, when the organization is going out, you know, we don't care, you know, what you look like, where you come from, what you believe. We're just there to help you as in this community at that particular time. Now, I've never seen anyone when at the end, like when you said, hey, can I pray for us? Yeah, let's do it. I've never had anybody, non-believer or believer, that turned down prayer.
Really, that's fascinating, because I bet you've prayed with in 27, I got the seven in there, 27 your career, you probably prayed with a lot of people and you never had anybody turn you down.
Oh my God, man. I prayed till I was blue in the face. I mean, so many people, and so many people who have openly just said, hey man, I'm letting you know that I don't believe in that stuff. And I'm an atheist. You know, but yet it's still, when they were in the hospital, or when they were in a tight spot, when I said, hey, can I pray for you? Yeah, come on. You can pray for me. You know, and one great story too is that, I had a guy who I was working with, and this was right before I became, appointed one of the chaplain spots. It was working with him, and, every shift, I was the full-time cook, so I would always get my breakfast stuff out. I would put my iPad up there, and I would put my gospel music on. I turn the news on low, so I have all that going, and I'm just in my zone. I'm just inviting the atmosphere, man. I'm feeling mm-hmm. good, you mm-hmm. know. And so he was working overtime with us that particular day, and he was reading the newspaper, and I was seeing him over there, just kind of, you know, looking every now and then. He wasn't saying much. That whole shift went by, you know, 24-hour shift. And, man, I hadn't seen the guy in 6 months or so. And he worked with us another day. And when he came in, he said, can I talk to you for a second? I said, yeah, what's going on? He said, you remember when I was here like 6 months ago? And I kind of paused like, is this a loaded question? I'm like, yeah, I kind of remember. Maybe I don't recall, depending on what it is.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, well, yeah, I do kind of remember. He said, man, I remember watching you in the kitchen and you was playing your music and, you know, it's like you just having a good time. And I watched it throughout the day, how you just kind of treated people and how people kind of gravitated to you. He said, well, hey, I want to let you know that I was an atheist. And I said, really? Pause for a second. And then he said, but because of some things that happened in my life and some decisions that I made now. And he said, I just remember watching you that day, and I'd ask somebody about you at another place. They say, hey man, that guy's the real deal. And then so I say, hey man, that's wonderful news. So going to what you were just mentioning about being like one of my, you know, best days, that was a definite a great day, because he was lost but then now found.
And you didn't even say anything to him, really, right?
I didn't even
that day. He just, he's just there. There's something that he sensed there, and we know what that was. We know what that was, don't we? There's something that he sensed there.
And the greatest thing about it, not to go no longer into it, man, is that right now, me and him are really good friends. And when I got appointed in the chaplain's role, he called me. He said, "Man, I want to hold your arms up the way Joshua's arms was held up. And man, I'm there for you." And he sent me some scriptures to read, and I'm praying for you. And I'm just like, wow, man, look at God, And so, and it wasn't, like you said, it wasn't anything that I said so much. It was just how that I carried myself. And so I'm just so thankful.
Ray, you bring up another point in one of your chapters, in your books. I'm going to hold up your books right here. You sent a couple of books. You were kind enough to send us a signed copy that we're going to give away to our audience. But in one of the chapters, you talk about the importance of listening. And if you've written, you're on your sixth book, so they probably all run together. But do you remember the chapter I'm talking about where you're talking about a hero listens? Do you remember the story in that one? There was the story of you went to a call where there was a suicide. And the friend says, she was talking to me, and I wish I would have listened better. And you talk about in there the power of listening or the importance of listening, but it makes me think of the story you just shared, that there's so many things that we can do to impact people's life. It's not always, it doesn't always have to be a saying something.
Right.
It can be you with your music on and you're making a meal and the guy just senses something different about you. Or sometimes, like in that chapter where you just talk about, you're not saying anything, you're just listening, right?
Just listening, yeah.
But I bet you spent a lot of time as a chaplain just listening a lot of times.
Oh, man. Man, you hit it right on the head again with that. And that's probably one of the best attributes that I've had. I feel like I'm a great listener, and when you go in, you talk to, sometimes you just sit there and it's almost like when Job's two friends were with him when he was going through everything that he was going through. They just sat there and they just listened. They just, until one of them just actually spoke up and said, "Man, just, went too far, don't take that, but yeah, man, I mean, that's a really big part of ministry, just being able to just listen, hear somebody out. Because most times what I've also noticed is that first responders, they just want somebody who understands and who's there for them, because most times they're there for everyone else, but nobody's there to listen or be there for them. But then on the other hand, what you always talk about is that you have to make a choice. It's all about making the right choice at the right time, And so that's what the organization, helps to build those relationships, so that you can make a choice, which happens to be the right choice that possibly at some point in time could save your life.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So let me ask you a question. This is kind of an interesting question. I thought of this morning as I was driving to do this interview. Can I ask you your age? Will I get in trouble for asking you your age? Because I'll give you mine up first. I'm 52. I'm 52.
You're 52. So you remember when we first met a couple years ago?
Yeah.
We kind of talked about that or whatever. It's not. I just turned 53 3 weeks ago.
Okay. So we're close then. I'm catching you. I'm right behind you. I'm on your heels.
Yeah. That's why we got along so well. We're the same.
Yeah. But there's something interesting about as you age, right? As you have some more decades in your rearview mirror than you may have in their windshield.
Right.
Are things more black and white as you get older, or are they grayer as you get older? What do you think?
I'm gonna say black or white.
Really? Okay.
Just because of the fact that it's either, with me, kind of like it's either yes or no. It's either good or evil, or it's either. So that's like two different. I mean, just it's clear, and like you said, no gray areas.
Yeah.
And it's easy. It's either you're gonna serve or you're not.
Yeah.
You're either gonna, and then here's the line, here's the fence. You're gonna be on this side, you're gonna be on that side. People know that I'm a community guy. I'm about relationships. I'm about connecting. I'm about community. And so I'm either going to be, I'm going to be in, or I'm not going to be in, you know? So,
yeah.
Especially as we're getting older, you know, definitely we're changing, and we don't really have a lot of time to play around in the middle. We just got to say, hey, you know what? I'm going to the party, or I'm not. I'm staying home, you know? So it's, you know, we don't have time, you know, we have too much stuff that we're doing to benefit others, and we don't have time to play games. So it's either right or left, black or white.
Yeah, man, that makes total sense. And I think that's one of the gifts about getting older is when you said it several times, I don't have time, I don't have time, I don't have time. When you're in your 20s and 30s, you think but you think you got all the time in the world. But as you get older, you just start, you go, I don't have time. I don't have time to mess around anymore. I don't have time. Like, I got to be serious about this. And, you know, I was reading through Ezekiel, probably read through it a dozen times this last year, which is really funny. Cause if anybody knows if our listeners, not all of our listeners are from a faith-based perspective, but those that are know that Ezekiel can tend to be kind of a dark book. You know, he keeps going, it's all meaningless. It's all meaningless. But I fell in love with that book this last year, but there was a verse that stood out to me, and Solomon 3000 years ago, he said, only a fool doesn't think of his death often. In that word often, he's like, we're foolish if we don't remember that we're mortal human beings, that we don't have forever. And he doesn't just say to think about that every once in a while, he says often. So I think your answer, the way you answered that, is a little bit where I'm at too, where the older I get, the more I go like, man, I don't want to mess around with things. We don't have forever. We don't have a lot of time left. You know, we might get another couple of decades. We might have a day, but I definitely know I have less in my windshield than I had my rear view mirror, right?
Yes, indeed. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, hey, how do people get a hold of you? If you're doing some incredible work, if people wanted to get one of these books that you're talking about, if they wanted to follow you, if they wanted to catch you as a speaker and have you come in to speak to their group, where would they find you?
Man, you know, I'm on all social media platforms. The easiest route, you know, if you want to get a hold of me, you know, my website is www.rayschufford.com. RaySchufford.com. The organization's name, once again, is tothenextshift.org. So that's the number 2, thethshift.org. I'm sorry, tothenextshift.org. You have that. And, you know, the phone number is there, 469-337-7269. We always respond. We answer the call as first responders do. And, cause we know the importance of making sure that, you know, when someone needs you, you know, you answer the call, and that's what we should be doing anyway. You know, if someone needs us, if you need a first responder, which we can always take the example of the ultimate first responder, being Christ, man, you know, and he was there and he first responded first, so we could always have the life that we, you know, choose right now. And so, but yeah, that's how you can get a hold of me. I'm on Instagram, To The Next Shift.
Yeah.
I'm on Facebook, To The Next Shift. And I always just kind of mess around with people all the time and say, if you really want to, you know more about me, just Google me.
Yeah, okay. I challenge our audience. Google him, Ray Schufert. Google him.
Yeah.
Hey, Ray, you know what? You know what's really cool about this, and I've enjoyed this. We're gonna wrap things up, and then I'm gonna ask you the two truths and a lie.
Okay.
But there's some people when you meet them just for a few minutes, you just know there's something there. And whatever that guy felt in that room that day when you were cooking that meal and you had the music going is what I felt backstage 2 years ago when I met you that brief moment. We had a mutual friend. I was there with this guy and we were speaking and you were backstage with him and you're a friend of his. But that brief moment that we had, I left going, man, I like that guy. There's something about that guy. So this was just a gift to me to get to interview you. Thank you. And I know it was a gift to our audience. Cause I'm going to say that I know I'll probably embarrass you with this, but you're a hero. 27 years serving, you continue to serve, and you continue to serve our heroes, our first responders. So I just want to say thank you. We appreciate it.
Thank you. And once again, when I left as well, I felt the same way. And I know you reached out to me and you said, hey, we're gonna do something, you know, and sure enough, we, you know, 2 years later, but just seeing you and reconnecting with you, it's almost as like we saw each other last week, man. And I'm really honored as well, you know, and I'm definitely thankful that you feel like that I am a hero. But you know, sometimes, you know, you always personally, you're like, I'm not a hero. You know, that's always what people have said. But when you look at, you know, what a hero does, and you're going back to, you know, one of the books, you know, a hero hears the call and does something about it. A hero encourages others in times of need, nourishes relationships, and also obeys all opportunities. And that's where we all are just, you know, heroes waiting to be unmasked. And so, man, I thank you for that, man. Love you.
You bet, man. You bet. Love you too, brother. So, two truths and a lie. It's ironic because we call this no gray areas. I'm going to ask you to lie to me. So give me three simple statements. I got to try to guess which one the lie is.
Okay. The first one is, I was a Dallas police officer for 2 years before joining the Dallas Fire and Rescue Department. The second one is, I registered for Barber College at age 13 and received my license at 16. And has been a licensed barber for nearly 40 years. And the last one is, I've seen the movie Forrest Gump nearly 200 times, and it's my favorite movie.
Hey, I like these. I like these. Okay, I'm going to go with the number two is a truth. And I'm just going with that because I actually know you are a barber and you have your own company. And is that one true?
Yeah, that's true.
That's okay.
True.
All right. All right. That's I got true. A 50-50 chance here. How many times did you say Forrest Gump?
200 times.
That's a lot of times, but that's an old movie. That's a great movie though. And then there are a lot of people. I know a number of people that started with the police department, went to the fire department because you call the police when the police are called in, usually people don't want to see them. You always want right. to see a firefighter. Right. So, right. Oh man. That these are good. These are good, Ray. I'm going to go with number one is the lie.
So you're saying that I was not a Dallas.
Yeah.
I've 2 years.
No. I'm that saying you watched Forrest Gump 200 times, but you weren't a police officer.
You are correct, Amundo. Forrest Gump is my absolute favorite movie. Me and my family took a RV road trip excursion this past summer up to Charleston, South Carolina, where we sat on the bench where Forrest Gump actually was filmed, waiting for the bus. And so that's definitely one of my favorite movies, and I've seen it over 200 times easily or whatever. But I was not a Dallas police officer before I became a firefighter.
But yeah. You probably work with a lot of people that did do that, right? With a transition, that's not uncommon. So that's why you had good ones. You had really good ones. Those are great. But now I got to go watch Forrest Gump again. It's been a long time since I've seen it. I got to go home and watch that again. So Remember the Titans is the movie that I've probably watched. I bet it's 100 times. That's another good one, huh?
Yeah, it is. It is. It really is. Yeah. And one thing, man, I'm a movie buff. And I love to just watch different movies and see different now camera angles. But, you know, once again, as we get older, you start to every time I look at Forrest Gump, something else sticks out that I'll see or I hear. And I'm like, wow, I didn't really pay attention to that. But then now, guess what? Because we're in different spaces, we're in different areas of our lives. It's easy to miss something when you were 20 some years old versus now being 50 years old. And so, Man, I love
Ray. You just brought up. We could have a whole nother podcast on that. That you do. You start different stages in life. There's things that stick out to you more. Man, that's a whole nother episode. We might have to have you back someday. Well, hey, since you told me, I'm gonna sign off by saying thank you not to Ray but to Shu because you said your friends call you Shu. So, Shu, thank you so much. We really really appreciated our time today.
Man, thank you, P. Man, it's been a pleasure and an honor. And, you know, to all the listeners and people involved with your, you know, your staff, hey, man, I'll be praying for them. And I definitely look forward to, you know, to hearing back from you soon, brother.
All right. Thank you. What a transformational episode that was with Ray. If you want to learn more about the impact Ray is making, visit rayshuford.com or tothenextshift.org, two with the numerical number. Remember to like, follow, and subscribe. We'll see you next time at No Gray Areas.